So what is the essential message of the Bhagavad Gita? We were just chanting the Gita Dhyanam, Advaitamrita Varshani, Bhagavati, Ashtadashadhyayani, Ambatvam Anusandadami, Bhagavad Gita Bhavadveshini. This Gita Dhyanam is our prostrations to Mother Gita, who gives us the knowledge of Advaita, Advaitamrita, the nectar of immortality, nectar of this knowledge. This Mother Gita is giving us to us, and we prostrate to her because this knowledge, it says, it frees us from the sagar of bhava. Bhagavad Gita bhavadveshini. So it removes the us from the ocean of bhava or sansara. Sansara means the world. So bhava means becoming. So I always want to become something. By becoming this, I'll be happy. By becoming this, I'll be successful. I am this, but I need to be this. I need to be more calmer. I need to be more happier. I need to be more rich. I need to be more successful. I need. And in that process, we are just chasing. It's not that success is not to be honored or respected, but the idea that somehow I am incomplete at this moment, and by getting this something, so it's always we are postponing our happiness, postponing our peace of mind for some future after retirement. Then I will, you know, sit down and study the Gita. Then I will meditate. So we keep postponing. And so the Bhagavad Gita tells us that this knowledge is here and now. We all, this Om, the Bhagwan, the consciousness, is within every one of us. And this knowledge only reinforces the idea that we are all were essentially divine spiritual beings. And what we do is we spend all our life with the body, we chase after objects of the world. With the mind, I want emotions. There are some new people, so I thought I'll just cover this chart. With the mind, I want to get more emotions, more joy. And with my intellect, I want to have more thoughts, more success. So with the body, these objects, emotions, and thoughts are the world. And we keep pursuing that with our body, mind, and intellect, driven by our vasanas, our desires. But we all have the divinity, Om, the consciousness within us. And all Bhagavad Gita does is uncover our ignorance and realize our immortality. So God is not somebody sitting in heaven or in Kailash or in the temple, but is me, in me, and that Advaita, that there is no duality. God and I are not separate. That is the essential message of the Bhagavad Gita. And that's what we have been studying the past few years. We are up to almost to the end of the 18th chapter. And the Gita gives us various paths. You can do it through the path of Karma Yoga, which we studied in the 3rd chapter. Through the path of Bhakti or knowledge, which we studied in the 12th chapter. Through the path of knowledge. So Bhakti is devotion. The path of Bhakti or devotion, which we studied in the 12th chapter. Or the path of knowledge, which is throughout the Bhagavad Gita. It is interspersed throughout in the 7th chapter, 9th chapter, 5th chapter, 13, 14, 15. Everywhere this knowledge is a thread that goes through the entire Gita. And then through the path of meditation or dhyana, which we studied in the 6th chapter. So all of these paths take us to the goal of self-realization or God-realization. And Bhagavad Gita is the knowledge that will take us across. And of course, Lord Krishna was the one who gave this knowledge to Arjuna, as you can see in the Mahabharata. And it is said the Bhagavad Gita is the essence of the Upanishads. See, the Upanishads were taught to very advanced students who were ready for this knowledge. But Arjuna was not an advanced student. He was a man of the world like us, you know, involved in the world, a warrior, prince, you know, very much. And so for him, that same essence was simplified and made understandable. And that's why the Bhagavad Gita is so universally loved, because each and every one of us, no matter what level we are, no matter how much spirituality we have studied, we can relate to the Bhagavad Gita. And what I have found is any problem you encounter anywhere, anytime in this world, there is no problem that does not have a verse applicable that will be a solution in the Bhagavad Gita. So this knowledge helps us to overcome problems. So that is why we study this scripture. And today we'll be talking about, Krishna is talking about the teacher, one who teaches the Bhagavad Gita and one who studies the Bhagavad Gita, what should be their attitude. So for us, these verses are quite useful. So verse number 68, chapter 18, verse number 68. Ya imam paramam guhyam. Madbhakteshwabhidhasyati. Bhaktim mai param kritva. Mame vaishyatya samshayah. So, the imam param gohyam. Yaha means whoever that person may be. Yaha is a generic pronoun which means whoever. Could be male or female, young or old, short or tall, black or white, Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, whoever that person may be. Imam param guhyam, this supreme secret, param guhyam, this supreme secret, mad bhakteshu, to my devotees, Krishna says, abhidhasyati. So one who teaches this knowledge of mine, this supreme knowledge of mine to my devotees, so that means a teacher of Bhagavad Gita, what does he do? Bhaktim mai param kritva. He is practicing devotion. Bhakti means devotion. Mai param kritva. He is practicing my devotion. He is actually worshipping me. That's what Krishna says. Through this teaching. And mam ev aishyati. Me alone. Aishyati he will reach. Asamshaya. There is no doubt. So here he is praising the teacher, the one who teaches the Bhagavad Gita. In our case, Swami Chinmayananda, who has given us this knowledge. So it is a praise of such teachers who have taught us the Bhagavad Gita. So there are a few points in this, even though it's kind of simple. But one is secret, and we have talked about this before. The secret, this word was misused by the Brahmins in India, saying that this is a secret knowledge, only should be studied in Sanskrit, only people who are deserving, who we think are deserving. So for thousands of years, this knowledge was not widely propagated. Initially it was, but then over the years it slowly was. And that's what happens with a lot of the teachings. The great prophets, the masters, they give out the knowledge freely to everybody, whether it's Christ or whether it's Buddha or Shankaracharya or Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, Valmiki in the Ramayana. But then the followers do not understand, or they misunderstand it, or they use it for political purposes. So only we should have it, and anybody else who doesn't have it should be killed. All those problems come because of misunderstanding of the teaching. So when he says secret, Krishna does not mean that it should be kept secret. What he says is this knowledge is secret until a guru reveals it to you. Like when I first started studying the Bhagavad Gita a long time ago, it was all in Sanskrit. We didn't understand anything. And then we listened to Swami, read Swamiji's commentary, listened to various acharyas, Swami Chinmayananda, Gurudev himself. Actually, I was blessed to have heard a lot of his chapters when I was a teenager in Bombay. My mother used to take me to Swamiji's lectures. And then subsequently when we attended some of the camps, and then of course Swami Ishwarananda and all the other acharyas who have come. So unless a guru points it out to you, this Sanskrit teachings remain a secret. Also, the teachings are very symbolic. The words are, you cannot take a Sanskrit dictionary and translate it and try to understand, because a lot of the words don't make sense. So it is a very symbolic. It is the same in all the scriptures, even the Bible. There are so many symbols, even in Quran. So if you directly translate, that's where the misunderstanding comes. You have to see what the teacher is indicating. In Sanskrit, that is a beautiful comparison example. They call it Shakha Chandra Nyaya. Shakha means branch, Chandra means the moon. So Shakha Chandra Nyaya. So what they say is like that is the just the hazy crescent, the crescent moon has just come out. You know, second day, you can barely see the moon. And the teacher and the guru are, I mean, the student and the guru are walking, and guru says, look at the moon, you know, beautiful. And student says, where? He can't see it because it's so subtle. And so guru says, wait, I'll show you. You know, you see this tree? Yes. Now behind that, there's another tree? Yes. Now on that tree, you see this big branch? Yes. From the big branch, there is a small branch coming out in this direction? Yes, I see it. Now look in the direction of the leaves of this branch, and there behind you will see the moon. And the student says, yeah. So what he has to do is shift his attention from the branch to the moon. The branch is helpful in showing the moon, but the branch is not the moon. The branch is not even close to the moon, but using the knowledge of the branch, the student is able to see the moon. So similarly, these scriptures are like that branch, which indicate to us what Krishna is, what Jesus is, what Buddha represents, what Ram represents. So the knowledge of that ultimate reality, Brahman, that consciousness, is so subtle, it's so difficult to comprehend for an average person like you or me. So these scriptures are like that branch, which will indicate to us the nature of that. And by following what is indicated in the scriptures are not the truth. They are not the ultimate, but they point us to the truth. And that's why Gita we revere, because it is came from the Lord himself and very clearly indicates to us the nature of God. So that's why it is said it is secret, because it needs a teacher. It's like quantum physics. Now, if I try to read a textbook of quantum physics, I'll be completely lost. Why? Because I have no background. But if I have done bachelor's in physics, master's, a PhD, then I pick up a book, you know, it makes sense. So similarly, this knowledge needs some background and then a right teacher. So that's why he says, whoever this knowledge of me, he teaches to my devotees. Now, what is the quality of the teacher? So it says knowledge and abidance. In the Mundaka Upanishad, it says the student should approach the teacher for this knowledge. And what should be the teacher be? Shrotriyam Brahma Nishtham. He should be Shrotriyam. He should have the knowledge. He or she, obviously, we're not saying teacher can only be a he, but we're using he generically. So that teacher should have the knowledge, Shrotriyam, and Brahma Nishtham, and himself should abide in this knowledge. So there may be a university professor who can speak in beautifully in Sanskrit, can give discourses, but does not sit and meditate, has no personal knowledge of that, then such a teacher cannot be called a guru. He can be called a professor. A true guru is one who not only has studied the scripture, but has understood it, abides in it, and lives the knowledge, lives the path, and himself has experience of the higher, or at least is on that path. So that sincerity is very important. And then he says, bhaktim mayi param kritva in mad bhakteshu abhidhasyati. So the teacher and the student should both be devotees of the Lord. Teacher should not have the attitude that I am teaching this. No, we are all devotees of Krishna. We are all one. And we are all studying this knowledge together. And devotion does not only mean offering flowers or lighting a candle or offering a fruit. That is good. You know, you do that. But Krishna says, if you offer a flower or a fruit, where did you get it? From me. I'm the one who made the fruit. I am the one who made the flower. The candle, the materials you all got from me. So when the two things we can offer to the Lord, one is our ego, which he does not have. You know, we have that. We talked about that last week. Or we can spread this knowledge. And that is the way you can worship God. True worship of God is spreading this knowledge. So that's why devotion also means identification. Just as we see the national flag and we say, oh, that reminds me of the United States of America. Or if you see an Indian flag, tricolor, reminds me of the mother country. So the flag represents that. And then you develop patriotism. Yes, you know, I should be devoted to the United States because, you know, we say we stand as one family and all that for the Chinmay mission. And same way, I pledge allegiance to the... So this pledge or this flag reminds us of this country. So similarly, when we study this, we should become one with Krishna. We should identify with him that Krishna is the one speaking through me and Krishna is the one listening. So we both should have that Krishna attitude. Then only the studies will be useful. And the Upanishads talk a lot about that. There is in the Taittiriya Upanishad, when the student who has stayed with the teacher for 12 years in his Gurukula, we usually teach that to the high school students when they are graduating. And the final instruction the teacher is giving to the students, there are a set of instructions that are given. It's called Shikshavalli. But one of the line is Swadhyaya Pravachanabhyam Na Pramaditavyam. So the teacher is telling the student, having studied these scriptures, do not stop studying. Continue your studies, not only the material, of course, the student has to go ahead and study to become a doctor or engineer or whatever, but do not give up your spiritual studies and pravachanabhyam, and do not stop spreading this knowledge. Somebody might say, you know, I don't know the Gita that much, how can I teach? No, wherever you are, there is always somebody whom you can tell. So this knowledge should be spread. You can always tell your spouse or your child or your neighbor, you know, this the knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita. Maybe present them a book, encourage them to listen to these talks, or you can go to the website. There are talks by, you know, by all the acharyas of Chinmay Mission. Even Tony has put my talks. So listening to the talks yourself, encouraging others to listen, and distributing these texts is another way of teaching or spreading this knowledge. Why? Because Rishi Rinam, we all have a debt to our rishis. Rishis, the prophets, you know, the great, you know, who have spread this knowledge, who have given us this knowledge. Whether it's, as I said, Krishna or Shankaracharya or Swami Chinmayananda or Jesus, or talking about Jesus, you know, if he was a priest today and if he was presiding over a wedding, you know, if the priest, if Jesus was a priest and was conducting a wedding, you know what he would say? He would say, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. So, but anyway, he is not doing that today. He's teaching us about the Bible. So this debt we owe to our gurus, to our teachers, to the rishis who have given this beautiful knowledge to us, we owe it to them to spread this knowledge. Because, or same thing, if you have obtained something from your parents, something good, it is our duty to pass it on to our children. And that's why this Balvihar is very important, because our children are learning our culture, our values, you know, the knowledge that our parents passed on to us. So that is our duty. That is our Rishi Rinam. Now, how should the teacher teach? So it says it's like a musician. Now he's singing. But if the musician is not fully involved in the music, he's not himself enjoying the music, he's just doing it as a job, okay, I just need to earn money, I'm going to sing so I get paid, then the music will not inspire the audience. So similarly, the teacher should himself or herself be inspired by this knowledge. be one with that knowledge when the teaching is going on. It should not be just done mechanically or not just done to earn money. Same thing a cook. If a lady does not enjoy her own cooking, does not like her own food, obviously the, you know, it's not going to be appealing. So the first of all, I should enjoy the cooking. I should like what I cook, then only I can serve it to the children. And as we said, it should be done as a worship. Somebody asked Swami Chinmayananda, Swamiji, you say you are a saint. He said, I don't say it, but people say I am. He said, but we never see you praying. You never even, do anything. We don't never offer flowers. You don't sit down. And so many, priests spend half an hour, 1 hour every day in the temple. We never see you praying. He said, my talking is my worship. See, he used to teach. And he says, when I teach, that is my offering to Krishna. Because this knowledge I have, so teaching is my worship. And the same he taught to his brahmacharis, the students who studied in Bombay. They have this course for 2 years where they teach this knowledge free of charge to the brahmacharis, who then are, they may or they may not stay with the mission. They are taught for 2 years completely free. Lodging is free. Food is free. The teaching is free. After that, if they wish, they could stay with the mission, or if they wish, then they don't need to. But the majority of them do. At least about 3/4 of the people stay with the mission and become teachers. And that's why Swami Ishwarananda, who comes here, Vimal Chaitanya Ji, Swami Bodhatmananda Ji, Prabodh Ji, Swami Tejomayananda Ji, who was the worldwide head, they are all students of Swami Chinmayananda of this course. So Swamiji used to tell them, Gurudev used to tell them, he says, when you are going out to teach, don't go out with the idea that, I am a teacher and now people should come and touch my feet, or people should offer me bhiksha or take me home and feed them, or Guru Dakshina. He says, teaching should be loud mananam. See, you are thinking about this knowledge within, and that same thinking should come out. So that means if you have the say ideas within you, those ideas should come out. And by constant thinking of these ideas, because obviously we have to prepare, whoever is teaching has to prepare. So while you are preparing, you are in these thoughts. While you are delivering the talk, you are in these thoughts. Then people ask you questions. Again, you have to think, So, and then go back and recapitulate what I said. Was it right or wrong? So constant living in these thoughts is also meditation. Meditation is not only sitting, with our, that is good, but even thinking about these thoughts is meditation. Talking about meditation, we do have a meditation class every Thursday at 6:30 to 7:30. We're just starting a new book by Swami Chinmayananda himself, Gurudev, Meditation and Life, which is a very practical book. So if those who wish to come, may let me know, and then I can send you some preparatory video that you can watch beforehand. So by constant dwelling in these thoughts, Krishna says, he will reach me. So when a person is constantly thinking about these thoughts, teaching these thoughts, then ultimately he becomes one with that. So that's what Krishna says. One who teaches this knowledge is dear to me and will definitely reach me without any doubt. There is no samshaya, there is no doubt in my mind. He says that my teacher, if he does it with the sincere attitude of a devotee and also attempts to practice this knowledge. See, one is Gurudev says in another place, he says, your words will have no meaning unless you actually practice it. You may speak this, but if you are not living this, this reminds me of a beautiful story. This lady, her young boy, he was hardly 8 or 10 years old, and he was diagnosed to have juvenile diabetes. Juvenile diabetes is such a dangerous disease. Very soon they get kidney problems, eye problems, because at that age, it's very brittle. The sugar is very hard to control. Arun sure knows. goes up and goes down, and you have to carefully balance the insulin, the diet. You have to watch the sugar. It's very, very difficult disease to treat. And now, of course, we have insulin pumps. But in the olden days, it used to be a very difficult disease to treat. So this young boy was diagnosed, and his mother should tell him, don't eat sugar. You know, sugar is not good for you. And he would just go and, you know, take a whole box of chocolates or mithai and just eat it. But he didn't know. And the more the teacher told him, the more he rebelled, more the mother told him. So she takes him to the Swami and says, you know, Swamiji, you know, at the mission, he says, can you please talk to my son? You know, he eats too much sugar and it's not good for him. The doctor tells me his blood sugar is 400, 500. Can you please talk to him? So Swami says, bring him back after 1 month. Why can't you talk to him right now? No, bring him back after a month. She said, okay. So she takes him, and 1 month his sugar is very brittle. And after 1 month, she comes back and to the Swami and tells the Swami, can you tell him? So Swami tells the boy, don't eat sugar. It's not good for you. And then he explains to him why. So she says, Swamiji, a month ago, you could have told him this. Why did you have to wait a month? He says, a month ago, I used to eat sugar. So I had to give up sugar for 1 month. Then only I could tell this boy out of it. And it comes out of conviction, not out of, otherwise mechanically you can teach. So that is what they say, that the teaching should come from personal experience. And what is our duty? So Swamiji in his commentary gives a very beautiful example. Gurudevi says it is like a stone in the pond. Like now there is a pond, right? So I throw a stone, big stone, and what does it creates ripples all the way to the edge of the pond, to the shore. Now suppose there is a big container of oil, thick oil, and there I put a stone. What will happen? A few ripples will arise. It won't go anywhere much. Little bit it will spread and then it will stop. But suppose there is a mud, like almost like muck or cement, and I throw a stone in there, thup, it will just fall. It will just collapse. It's not going to go spread anywhere. So similarly, he says, we should not be like that muck where this knowledge came and didn't have any effect, didn't do anything. So the idea is that this knowledge I should understand, I should imbibe, and then I should share with others. I should be like that water that when the waves came, it rippled out all across. So we should all make an attempt to teach this knowledge to others, to our children, to others. You know, we have study groups. We have two or three study groups that we run in here in Chiang Mai Mission, where on Wednesday night, we meet and we teach each other. You know, one person prepares and everybody discusses. So the idea is through study groups, you can learn. And then there is a ladies study group that Neeru is conducting on Tuesdays at 12:30, where also a lot of ladies come. So if somebody, you know, ladies who don't work outside the house, who are home, it's a wonderful opportunity to meet with other ladies and discuss and learn from each other. So that is the goal, that I should learn and then I should teach. So that is the attitude. And that's what Krishna says. That is what my teacher should be. That's verse number 68. Any questions? Any comments? Yes.
I'm having some difficulty understanding when to draw the line as far as even for my own kids or my relatives, when to know to offer them, or am I pushing too far as far as offering them? So last verse that we discussed last Sunday,
right,
discussed they use the words atapaskasya,
right,
abhaktikasya,
right.
So not offering those without devotion, without austerity,
right.
This verse talks about offering,
right,
or one of the two things offering, either ego or passing on the knowledge,
right.
So if you look at saints like in 1979, A.A.C. Bhaktivedanta Prabhupada came to America. His sole goal was to just spread the knowledge of Krishna.
Yes.
And he did not discriminate who he gave that Gita to or the knowledge to. where do you...
Yeah, so that's a very good question. Same thing people ask Gurudev. Why are you giving this knowledge? You know, he used to, when he was speaking, there were 20,000, 30,000 people. The whole Shivaji Park Maidan was full. And he said, why are you teaching? Most of them don't have any devotion. Most of them don't have any austerity. He says, my job is to spread this knowledge. What Krishna means when he uses this word austerity, bhakti, that a person who doesn't have that will not benefit. See, you may tell him, but unless he is ready, he will not benefit from this knowledge. But Gurudev said, that doesn't stop me. I just keep on teaching. I keep on talking. And I keep on, and now the knowledge is on the internet. Anybody can access it. But only a person who is a true spiritual seeker, who has those qualities of austerity, devotion, and love for God, will truly benefit. For other person, he will listen to it. It's like a difference between reading and studying. I was going to talk about it in the third verse. You may read the newspaper. You don't study the newspaper. You just read it, right, to get the knowledge. But the Gita, you cannot read. You have to study. So there's a difference. So a person who listens, if he listens as, okay, something is going on, let me listen, then it's okay. But what happens is this knowledge has its own power and slowly it will penetrate. Once you have been exposed to this knowledge, and that's why my mother used to take me to Swami Chinmayanandas and Rajneesh's and several other Swami's lectures. I was a teenager. I hardly had much interest in this, and I used to just go because she used to drag me, literally. But that seed stayed. And that's why, you know, this all of us got involved in the Chinmaya mission, because somebody had planted that seed. And that's why then later on we got more interested in that. So what we have to do, first of all, for our children, you don't give them a choice. You have to push them because they don't know what is good for them. Like I didn't know that going to Chinmayananda's lectures was good for me. But my mother forcibly took me. I even heard Rajneesh so clearly. I remember Rajneesh, his eyes were so powerful, you know, black eyes. They like penetrate to your soul. I don't remember what he spoke, but I still clearly can visualize his eyes even today. I was, you know, probably 10 or 12 years old. So this knowledge always will bear fruit. It's very, very powerful. So you have to expose your children. Children, we do not give them a choice. That if they say, oh, I don't want to go to Bal Vihar, I'm so busy, I have so much homework, oh, I have projects. We used to tell our children, all our three kids went through Bal Vihar. We used to tell them, look, you have 60 hours from Friday, 5 o'clock, to Monday morning. It's 60 or 65 hours. Out of that 1.5 hour, we are asking you to go to Bal Vihar. So out of 62 hours, 1.5 hour, you cannot spare. So because then you say you have all the other time to do your projects. How come you only remember on Sunday at 11 o'clock? So children, we don't give them a choice. But for others, you offer it to them. You can take a book and give it to them. You can say, read it. Or you can tell them, look, these classes are very good. Or more than that, what happens is that when this knowledge, say there is a spouse, like husband and wife, and the wife is studying and the husband is not going. But what he will happen is he will notice that there is a subtle change in my spouse, in her behavior. She's much more calmer, much more accepting, much more patient. So then he will say, what is the reason? So your behavior will reflect this knowledge. So then it will encourage others to come. But it's a gradual process.